Coming up today on Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
I was working nights as an interior designer commercial, and I had these two kids and decided to start a finance company.
You created iFinance Canada.
Yes. I was a single mom with two kids.
Wow.
And I had this idea that the Canada was going to go to a two-tiered market for medical procedures for pain. And I got worried that when my kids got older, that they wouldn't be able to afford medical procedures. I kept reinvesting and reinvesting. I didn't buy a Ferrari. I didn't buy designer clothes. I bought secondhand clothes. So I still go to Pandora in Mayfair. It's got really good stuff. I watch every single dime. When I was on The Real Housewives of Toronto, there was one of the housewives didn't like me. Said things like, "You have terrible style." And I thought, I didn't even know I had that style.
She wants to be you and she's jealous. But do you get on better with women or men?
I get along really well with gay men.
You're also married to one of the world's leading plastic surgeons. Talk me through that.
I was not into him when I first met him. He asked me out for 18 months.
And you kept saying no?
If he did operate on me, he couldn't date me.
Yeah, have you had a spiritual awakening or something?
I don't think so. Maybe when I lost my virginity.
Yeah, well, but
we've all had that.
Mine hallelujah. Was massive. How many times?
Until I met Richard.
You told me I was the biggest. We are so excited to have you here, Dr. Anne Kaplan-Mulholland. You are not just an entrepreneur, you are a force of reinvention. Doctor of Finance, award-winning entrepreneur. You've not just written one book, you've written seven. You are a television host. You are a stand-up comedian. You starred in The Real Housewives of Toronto. I mean, if that's not enough, business-wise, you've been honoured twice as Toronto's Woman of the Year by Ernst & Young. You have received the Stevie Award more than 10 times. We'll get on to what the Stevie Award is a little bit later. You have led companies that have ranked nine times with Canada's Profit 100. Not just that, the W100 too. I could go on and on and on about your achievements. What incredible energy. I'm so excited to interview you. Welcome to Entrepreneurs Worldwide.
Well, it's exciting to be here. Absolutely really exciting.
Yes, good.
Yeah. Okay.
And thank you for that introduction.
Oh, God. I could go on and on. I could waste the whole podcast doing it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think I've ever met anyone quite like you. You have just bought a castle for £9 million in Lim in Kent. And I tell you why.
And you can pronounce Lim, which is impressive.
Lim, that's right. She was pronouncing Lim. Lim. I tell you why I can pronounce it, because I'm a Folkestone boy and I know Lim Castle very well.
Very close.
Talk me through buying a castle.
So it was not a plan to buy a castle. My husband and I moved to England. And you're in real estate. I said everything that we looked at in Mayfair, we were looking Mayfair or that area, the cheapest condominium was £8.5 million. The market was at inflationary measures. Interest rates are going up. And I said, let's just rent. So we just rented.
48 grand a year.
Yes. So 4,000 a month for the service charge. And there was a swimming pool and everything else.
But Anne, that's small change to you from what I read.
I don't waste money. I watch every single dime.
Yeah.
So I want value for everything I get, and that was not value. So, and I also thought it would go down in value too.
So how do you find a castle?
So I looked online. I thought, this is expensive for a condo. So I thought, I wonder what a house costs in London. Now we're new to England.
Yeah.
So I'm looking, I thought, gee, you can buy a house on the outskirts of Mayfair and it's cheaper than buying a condo. Mm-hmm. I wonder what a castle costs, just out of curiosity. Wasn't looking to buy a castle. There was this castle, the Lim Castle, which I thought was limp because of the P in it.
I did too.
And I didn't tell my husband. He still thinks it's limp.
He thinks it's erect.
Yes.
But there's always Viagra, tell him.
Oh, no, I don't correct him. I just... So I Googled and texted the broker and said, you know, is this castle really for sale? And I thought, now that I know about service charges and things, if you had a castle, you could put a wedding venue in there. And you could pay all your fees. And we said, he told me it was sold. And so then he calls me 6 weeks later and says the deal fell through. It was 11 million. It was valued at 40 million pounds. 11 million pound offer fell through. They were in negotiations or in surveys.
Yeah.
And he said, you want to look at it? And I said to my husband, let's go look at this castle. He goes, I'm not buying a castle. I said, well, we'll go look. And you know who makes the decisions
happy
in
wife,
a marriage.
Happy life.
Yes. And so we went down there the next day, put an offer in for 50% of what they had offered before for $6.5 million. Mm-hmm. And after the surveys, when they had a lot of problems, took $1 million off and said, I'll give you $5.5 million by 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Take it or leave it.
How amazing, though, that that was valued at 40. What were they thinking?
Because they have to have two assessments. One is what the values it at, not the real estate. And then there's the insured value.
Now, yeah. How much are you going to have to spend on it?
We spent close to just over 20 million.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Wow. Is it finished now?
It'll never be finished.
Yeah. More interestingly, you were one of the ladies of Toronto, so you know all about TV, and you've come up with this idea, which is absolutely genius. You've had the renovation filmed.
Yes.
What was it called?
It's called Queen of the Castle.
Queen of the Castle. And
they're fabulous. Filming it. We're going into third season.
Has it aired yet anywhere?
Yes,
seven countries. What about the UK? Where can people find you in the UK to watch it?
In the UK in a few months.
Basically, everything you do, you monetize.
Yes.
I get that. So yes. Your mind, are you thinking, I cannot do this if I can't justify it? It can't be self-supporting.
Yes, I invest in it before it's going to make money.
Yeah, very
so clever. We can't make the money off the place unless we open restaurants, which we've opened three. So we've got three actually open and running.
Wow.
In the castle. And then we have building all
and the
hotel
vision
rooms.
You created is you created this picturesque, beautiful princess where you're wearing different dresses, different colors, looking beautific.
Because looking over the top, it's like Freddie Mercury bought a castle and decided to decorate it. It is insane, the decorations. Now, with all due respect to history, we leave the stone, everything. It's a grade one listed building, but the decor is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
They're holding cell phones, taking selfies, and it's not your normal castle.
I've never seen anyone dressed so amazingly as you turned up today. But such an individual sense of style you have. I can just imagine what that looks like.
When I was on The Real Housewives of Toronto, there was one of the housewives didn't like me. Said things like, you have terrible style. And I thought, I didn't even know I had
that
style.
She wants to be you and she's jealous.
Style is just being yourself.
Yeah.
And you can wear something and just own it. Just who cares what you wear?
Yeah. So can I just take you back? So you created iFinance Canada Incorporated.
Yes. Yeah.
The person you are today, how far removed from the person you were when you started iFinance Canada?
So it was a whirlwind. When I started that company.
How old were you then?
I was in my early 30s. I was a single mom with two kids.
Wow.
And I had this idea that the Canada was going to go to a two-tiered market for medical procedures for pain because we're like Britain. We get a lot of it covered. And I got worried that when my kids got older, that they wouldn't be able to afford medical procedures. So I started a company to finance what was not covered by the government.
Brilliant. But you're more like the American business model for medical
coverage. More like the Britain. This is before people would wear their plastic surgeon on their sleeve like a badge of honor.
Absolutely.
It was before anyone had heard of Botox. It was 1996. I started that company and then moved into medical procedures. So it started as Medicard, then dental cards.
Talk me through the business model. So people pay a monthly fee to you. Take it from there.
So what we do is we market to the doctors and we get the doctors to offer financing available, little brochure or online or wherever it is, we get the doctors to market it in their clinic.
Oh, wow.
So somebody goes in and say they want a hair transplant or they want breast implants or they want a colonoscopy or something that's not covered by any kind of insurance or something, or they need interim financing. They'd say, well, you can either pay £10,000 or you can pay £250 a month. And so the financing application would come to us. We pay the doctor in full. And then we debit your account every month because you just had financing for whatever procedure. And that would go on for 48 months or whatever.
And you've done something like 2 billion of those, haven't you? Can I just ask you, the girl before you started all this, who was the child and who was the young teenager, who was the young woman?
I don't think I've changed since I was little from what I was told. I moved out at 14 years old, loved my parents. But I'd gone through a few fathers.
In Canada, where did you go to live?
I lived 2 miles from where my mother
was. Did
your
parents have a lot of money?
They had money,
so you were
but not a lot.
With a silver spoon in your mouth, would you?
No, my mother was a psychologist and the father that raised me was a radiologist and an internist. But my mother had an affair to conceive me with a Hawaiian entertainer.
Brilliant.
And they had three daughters, and then they went on to have a daughter after me. But they put me up for adoption, and the lady that was going to adopt me couldn't take me.
Wow.
So they ended up keeping me. But I'm the only dark-haired amongst blondes.
Were you kept with love and care? Yeah. Were you looked after properly?
They loved me.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. My father was very resentful that my mom had the affair and took it out on her and made us all watch. And so my sisters didn't survive that.
Oh, no.
But I did, and I was like...
And what do you mean by that?
They ended up institutionalized.
Didn't they?
Yeah, no, it was not good.
Yeah.
But I ended up being the one that would say, get off her, like, stop it. And
right, so did you grow up in a domestic violent home?
Yes.
Okay.
And so then I moved out at 14 when my mom had remarried a dentist. I still got free dental work. And then moved out at 14 and lived on my own. And she passed away. My mom passed away. She lived with me the last 5 years of her life and then passed away.
What are you by trade? So what are you studying? What are you graduating?
So I majored in finance and my master's of science. I went into spirituality and business culture. And then when they found out I had a finance company and all this data, the professor at the University of Toronto said to me, Anne, this is when I was doing my master's of science. You've got all that data. You should consider doing finance. Before that, I did an interior design degree.
Oh, bloody hell.
When you left at 14 and you walked out the door,
yeah,
where did you walk to? Did you have a house set up, a flat set up?
No, I rented a room off of this policeman. And he had two rooms for let, not far away from the school. I didn't want to change schools. I liked school. My mom had remarried and they were moving just out of town. So I just stayed in the school I was at, not far from where I had grown up. And that was it. I was by myself.
I mean, you're 14 years old. You're
I was scared.
Little child.
I was scared.
You're terrified.
And a dork. I was a dork.
And you were a dork.
Yes.
You were like me then. I was a dork too.
Yeah.
Because there's so many children that end up like that.
Yeah.
You're 14. You're walking into your little flat. I assume the policeman helped you previously?
My mum had found the place and that's where I lived. And
so
I
how did you cook? How do you know how to cook? How do you know how to clean?
We grew up with my mum cooked and that, but that was, I learned more because then the dad that raised me got sick and moved back to Canada. He had moved to Hawaii and he was not the Hawaiian, but he got sick and with chronic lymphatic leukemia and moved back. And I moved in with him and helped him until he died.
Oh, but Anne, I'm just struggling to understand. So many people go off the rails for so much less. Yeah. How are you not an absolute basket case?
I once went to have a psychologist analyze me and the doctor said, either people that have gone through what you've gone through go one way or they go the other. And he said, it's not going to be in between. And I guess, hopefully I went the other, either that or I'm completely bonkers. One of the two, but you'll never know.
Yeah, it's being squeezed so hard you create a diamond.
Don't know.
Do you feel that your spirituality, because you've had a certain amount of trauma in your life or experienced a lot of trauma, do you feel that that was essential for you to get through what must be pretty awful memories at times?
I don't live with those memories being vivid.
No, but has your spirituality helped you get through that?
I think life teachings. The interesting part is that my father went on to marry a woman who was sort of called herself a spiritual leader. And she would take me to people like Swami Muktananda, Chitsandra, Deepak Chopra,
all these different
types of people.
And Chopra?
Yeah. Well, I went to his...
Chopra, you're from Kent.
So Chopra. I would go and chant with all these people. And then I would think, there's no one belief that you follow, but you have to believe in your values and yourself. And so I think from a very young age, that was instilled in me. And I thought, a lot of this is a bunch of garbage. But... there is something to believing in something.
Yeah, have you had a spiritual awakening or something?
I don't think so. Maybe when I lost my virginity.
Yeah, well, but
we've all had that.
Mine hallelujah. Was massive. How many times?
Until I met Richard.
You told me I was the biggest. Do you know, she's had a spiritual awakening. It's called meeting me in lockdown, isn't it, darling?
So you're starting iFinance. How much emotional, mental, spiritual baggage were you dragging when you started iFinance? And was that the nuclear bomb that allowed you to just drive and drive and drive?
It was, I mean, I've always been driven. And my father had passed. I was now with these two children. My husband and I.
You're 30.
Just over 30. And my husband and I, well, my ex-husband's name is Gone with the Wind, and I had split up, and I was a single mom with no support with two children. And so I was working nights and as an interior designer, commercial interior designer, and I had these two kids and decided to start a finance company.
Just for our viewers and listeners, talk me through how a finance company works. You're selling a product, you're selling something, and then the banks finance it, do they? Is it multiple banks or one bank backs it? How does it work?
So I'll put it in more simplistic terms. Say I sell $5,000 loans and I'm getting 25% interest. So I get a 6% fee up front and then an interest rate as well. And then I package all those loans up and I sell them to a bank. And that's sold in a short-term loan. So they have a three-month hold period to see how those loans perform. Mm-hmm. Then I take them out of that bank account. That was Bank of Montreal in Canada. Take them out of that bank account and I sell those loans. And it's called non-asset-based lending. Mm-hmm. So I securitize that portfolio, meaning I take $1 million of loans and I sell them. So I might sell those loans up front for about $1,100,000. And then I keep those and they put a percentage aside, which is put aside for you would call default. Mm-hmm. So just in case there's a default. Yeah. And then I have a servicing fee that I have to consider of about 3% in our company. And then I take that $1,100,000 and I loan out $1,100,000. So I've taken the first million.
Am I right in saying you're not really exposed?
You have to manage your default rate.
What you're really describing is a Ponzi scheme.
No, because you're not borrowing from one to the other. But what became more interesting is when I started to do my doctorate, I was partway through doing at OISE, which is a business school. I've got these loans. I want to figure out why they're defaulting. And so I want to be able to predict the future of whether someone will default on a loan or not. He said, how much data do you have? And I said, about 50,000 data points at that point that have 3 years out defaulted or not defaulted. That's when they got me to switch to finance. Anyway, I ended up doing my doctorate in doing a predictive model on whether a loan would default or not, taking data from a person. A credit scoring model is what my doctorate is.
Oh my gosh.
I never sold my credit scoring model.
What's the benchmark on the defaultations?
It depends on your agreement with the bank and how much you want to.
How many people, in percentage terms, default?
Less than 5%.
Is that all it is?
Well, it depends how much you approve.
Yes, the point I was making is that you've got all this data. Are they buying it from you to set up this finance company?
They bought the company and the data.
They bought it. Is that when you really started making big money?
I was making money before that. And then the money that I was making, I never took money out of the company. But with the money that I was making, and because I had all these offices, I had a very positive cash flow. And I was making money from about 3 years into the company. And then I was taking that cash and then putting my offices in commercial buildings and buying the building. So I was buying real estate as being landlord or owner occupied.
Right.
So I could get better leverage at the banks. And then I started buying real estate. And
it just strikes me that you've achieved more in your lifetime than most people can achieve in 10. What is your USP? I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you've got more money than you ever know what to do with. You've just bought a castle. You've achieved so much. You've got nothing to prove. And then you're talking about going back in and learning about AI.
Always.
What is driving you?
I've been given a brain that I can use. Yeah. And so I'm more math driven, but I also have a creative side.
Yeah.
So there's an EQ and IQ.
Yes.
And
you've got it all.
The doctor that had to analyze me when I went on The Real Housewives, we had to be assessed. I don't know if they wanted us to fail or not, but he did an IQ and an EQ test. He said, I've never seen this. I've never seen someone with a high EQ and a high IQ. Mm.
That is a very potent combination to be given the gift of that. Sadly, with me, the only thing I have is an EQ. The IQ is on the floor.
I always think no.
If I had to pick one gift out, it's the EQ.
I thought that too. I was wondering why.
Yeah.
And I think there's just, if you actually break it down, there's different types of entrepreneurs. So the serial entrepreneurs who literally go on to create business, they're just mass production lines of businesses with a very high either EQ or IQ, but they've got a business partner that fills in the gap.
Sure.
And I was talking to the distribution company from the TV show I'm on, The Queen of the Castle, is fifth season. Right. And they do Killing Eve and Your Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston. They're the same distributors. So we're down there and they said, Anne, we want you to walk the red carpet.
Fantastic.
And I said, I'm going to bring drag queens with me.
Great.
And they said, you're what? And I said, I want drag queens with me and I'm going to hand out tiaras to everybody at the MIPCOM.
I love that.
And they said, I said, you don't understand. I'm a nobody. Nobody will know who I am. And I am going to be wearing a feather gown with a crown.
Clever.
And I'm going to hand out tiaras and I'm going to have a drag queen on each side and I'm going to walk that red carpet. So then they got on the phone, the conference call, including my husband, including my PR person, and they're all going, and you cannot do this. You don't do this.
Yes, do this.
And I said, trust me, I want 10 drag queens. Yeah. They called back and they said, you can have two. One of the broadcasters is affiliated with Drag Race. So I had to get them from Drag Race. And they never got them. And I phoned them up about 2 weeks before MIPCOM and I said, I'll get the drag queens. Don't worry about it. And it takes me 2 seconds to find a drag queen.
Of course, yeah.
I always have a drag queen at parties.
Yeah.
So
and do you always have a drag queen in your pocket?
Yes.
I need one.
I just like entertaining people.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not because they're a drag queen, but I knew for walking that red carpet, which it was 5 minutes of flash bobs, everything went
on. Did you know that is such a smart move? I want to talk about your TV career.
Yeah.
So Ladies of Toronto, talk me through that.
So in the Real Housewives of Toronto, I was pegged to do a show which was more, at the time, entrepreneurship. And then this happened to me twice. And so I had already hosted three TV shows and they were all makeover shows where you take somebody and you do a makeover, you do surgery and that, and you do their hair and their makeup and then do the reveal. Loved doing that. Mm-hmm. Three different TV shows, three different times. One of the producers said to me, I'm doing more of an entrepreneurship show. And it was more about...
Yeah, you're hardly a housewife.
Of more about the business of cosmetic enhancement, including makeup and hair and dressing. Mm. And because I'm in that world, we're lending money in that world. Mm. And I'm speaking to doctors in that world. And that show had already been pegged and picked up by a TV station. They called me up, the producer, and said, his name's Jeff. He said, Anne, they're auditioning for this show today. I think you should go down and audition. It will put you on the map. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what show it was. He didn't tell me. I was on the way to the airport. Mm. I changed my flight, diverted with my suitcase, went down, sat down. It was the Real Housewives of Toronto. And then they took me pretty well on the spot. And then I figured out it was Real Housewives. And it's a big franchise.
How scripted are they? Are you really falling out with people? Are people really
falling out?
Why? Because they are putting enough grenades into that show that make it explode.
Yes, because the one person that really was the troublemaker, they knew that when they got her.
Right.
And so they did. They do put different types of personalities together. Yeah. They also put alcohol in front of you and it takes a long time to set up and people are drinking champagne.
Sure.
There's personalities mesh. And you have to have that edit. You can say, I want to reshoot that. I never once did.
Oh, really?
Never did.
Even the ones who were drinking, I'm sure they wanted to reshoot. My gosh.
Yeah, but, and the one who took her panties off, that was good. She did.
Did she take it out or leave it in?
Did she really?
Yes, she did.
Jesus.
Wow.
She was that drunk. Yep.
Oh, my God. That's so
bad. And she regretted it.
They aired that, did they?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
So do you get on better with women or men?
I get along really well with gay men.
How the hell are you a stand-up comedian? Where did that go? Where did that start?
From public speaking, I mentioned to a group of women philanthropists, and I was asked to do a talk about, during COVID, so it was online. And I said to them, and I was doing stand-up comedy courses during COVID, so I could help with my public speaking. And I said to them, I'm doing courses myself. Why don't you do a course? Think outside the box during COVID. Don't do what you're comfortable with. Don't get in a rut. Do something new. And I said, for instance, I do stand-up comedy online. And then the Sick Kids Hospital, which I was doing the lecture for, came to me and asked me to do a stand-up comedy competition. So I started to train. I had a year to train. There's life and there's death. And everything in between, life is very funny. I'd rather laugh at everything.
I agree.
If it's something to do that with death or birth, it's not funny. But in between, it's funny. And just before she died, she wanted me by her side. And her son said, you make her laugh. And my sister said, now I get why you joke all the time.
Yeah. Do you think you're quick-witted?
Oh, yeah.
You're quick-witted. And you're quite dry, aren't you?
I'm very dry.
No, I was listening to something. I was listening to something that you came out with the other day about billionaires. Would you remember that?
So on a podcast, the interviewer or a vodcast, I guess.
I think you were saying also, sorry to interrupt, I think you were saying to be a good comic, you have to be really up with the news.
Oh, for being a good comic, I think for anything in life, you do need to pay attention to the news. Okay. You need to know your environment. You cannot make a joke, an intelligent joke, unless you have some knowledge.
Yeah, the quip that you came back with, I thought was absolutely bloody genius. And you would only be able to come back with a quip like that if you were right on top of the news and tell us what it was.
So the vodcaster said to me, he said, at the very end, he said, I have one last question to ask you. And he said, what do billionaires and millionaires lie about the most? Most people say
how much money they've got.
Yes. And I took like half a second and said, whether they know Jeffrey Epstein or not. So that's, but when you think about it,
they've been
all
on
in the
Lolita
news,
Express.
Yes, yes.
That's brilliant.
And if you watch for fun, I'll listen to the old, do you know Dean Martin?
Yes.
The old Dean Martin's stand-up comedy roasts or Don Rickles. Yeah. And you learn timing. So when you're going to do stand-up comedy, listen to all of those comedians and get the timing.
I don't think you can learn that though, Anne. Can you? You've got to have that inside of you.
You have to find your own way. You've got to be authentic.
Entrepreneurs Worldwide with Thompson Tindall.
What you've got with Thompson Tindall is a boutique, very specialized wealth management company, and a company that I trust implicitly. And I've been with them 6 or 7 years, and he has done wonders with my money.
Entrepreneurs Worldwide with Thompson Tindall, getting a grip on family wealth protection.
Please note, the value of your investments can go down as well as up, so you could get back less than you invested.
You went to the School of Life, and I think it's a brutal school. It's an absolutely brutal one, but you either embrace it or you're afraid of it. You've knocked it out of the park. So you started off, let's say you're a one-man band, you're starting with your idea, you're 30 years old. How did you understand what to do?
The offices that I had for myself, for the company, were really presented because we had to be bilingual. We had to have an office in Quebec, you know, so in different parts of the country. Canada is a very large country. Mm-hmm. But we were distributed through doctor's offices, learning the business. And then I remember watching, it was back when there were faxes.
I'm trying not to think of the Sackler family right now. Sorry.
So the fax came in, and I remember watching with the very first loan come in through a fax machine. And then it worked. And then
Fantastic. It
just went from there. And then you had to hire more people. And then I had to present to the banks. Mm. It took a long time to get the banks on board. So I had to figure it out. And there was a fellow by the name of Stuart Belkin, who he owned Roger Sugar and Belkin Paper. And he knew my brother. And I was presented to him. And he loaned me money with an interest rate coupon attached to it. And if I didn't pay the money back within a certain period of time, then he would have taken, I think, 6 months. Otherwise, so that gave me the time to pitch banks, but I did bring somebody on board.
We haven't interviewed anyone that hasn't been through bad times. Talk me through some of your bad times, because you must have had them. Have you nearly lost your money?
Well, that instance, you nearly lost it. Because in 6 months, I should be.
Yeah, but I didn't care. Cause
no, I agree.
It was, I mean, it's just money.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lose my money over a ridiculous decision. And I never spent money. Putting it all on red, you have to figure out where your break-even point is. Yeah. And so I knew that I could sell $3 million dollars in loans, it was Canadian dollars, in loans a month, and I would break even for the cost of running the company. Anything over $3 million, I'm making money.
Yeah.
And so I knew that. But I never took money out. I kept reinvesting and reinvesting. I didn't buy a Ferrari. I didn't buy designer clothes. I bought secondhand clothes. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy super big things for the kids. Wow.
You've walked in today. You looked just absolutely insanely fabulous. If you don't mind me saying, you're wearing, you know, tens of thousands of pounds worth of clothes there. If you didn't have that anymore, does it mean anything to you?
I don't think, I'd want to be poverty, but no, money never mattered.
So you're saying that you used to buy secondhand clothes. Now, of course, you don't have
clothes.
To.
Oh, no, I still go to this. I still go to Pandora in Mayfair. It's got really good stuff. In fact, I sent my assistant there today.
No, I get that.
Yeah, exactly. I watch every single dime. I worked as a waitress at a pancake house. I went in there and I said, I want a job. It's called bussing tables. Mm-hmm. That means you're not waitressing.
In America, bussing tables.
And then they said, sorry, you don't have any experience. And I said, how am I ever going to get experience if you don't give me a job? And they said, okay, we'll hire you. And I was 14, and I remember waking up one day, and I had a little sister, and I remember hearing a kid playing outside, and I wake up and I think, oh, that's not my sister. And I remember feeling sad. But I can't let that engulf me because that's what I was doing. And I
did you cry a lot?
No.
No, you just got on.
My son, one of my sons, says to me, he goes, Mom, you never cry. And
do you still never cry?
Sometimes. I went to San Diego the other day and I did a mud run in honor of my sister. And I cried after that because I miss her so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So when I think about that, that was one of the hardest losses I ever had. So, but I did win the Quirkle game before she passed. And she was looking at me. She had non-smoker's adenoid carcinoma for lung. And she was hooked up to a machine and she was at her mask on.
Non-smokers.
Wow. And she was a nurse.
That's so unfortunate.
And we were playing Quirkle. We always played Quirkle. And she had her mask on and she was... And I knew we were in the last hand that if I played one way, I'd win. And if I played the other way, she'd win.
Oh, and then which I went, way did
and
you
I'm looking at her like, should I? Shouldn't I?
Should you? Shouldn't
and be. Then I looked at her and I said, what's your prognosis? And she goes, just do it. And I won. I won the last game. I won.
Brilliant. That's what she wanted to see. Yeah. That's exactly what she wanted to see. Yeah. My God. That's amazing. Oh, that's sad. Yeah. I think
that
thank God
she
had a sister like you.
Thank God we had each other.
Yeah, thank God you had each other.
I just think you're incredible. You're also married to one of the world's leading plastic surgeons. Talk me through that.
I was not into him when I first met him. He asked me out for 18 months.
And you kept saying no?
If he did operate on me, he couldn't date me. There's a law in Canada. You can't operate on a patient.
Wow.
You can't marry a patient.
So why did you keep turning him down?
Well, he wasn't going, will you go out with me? He was just saying, can you meet for coffee and things like that. I called him Dr. Mulholland. One day he told me he liked me. And I thought, oh, okay. But I had to think about it. Mm-hmm. I was seeing somebody else, but I never told him because I wasn't interested in him. And I split up with that person. I said, there's someone I've met. I don't know if I want to date him or not, but I need to be single.
I wouldn't imagine there are many men out there that could even remotely fit the bill for you.
You could.
And, oh, I know that. I've been sitting here all the time. In fact, I was thinking of dumping you afterwards.
I'm married.
That's minor detail.
don't get in the way of the small stuff.
We are so happily married. It's
that's
weird.
Lovely.
We hold hands.
That's lovely.
We walk and hold hands.
That's lovely.
I'm just so happy.
You've managed to blend and remain yourself so intact that actually you're so feminine and gentle and you can see it. Now, obviously, you're very smart.
I've never really been called feminine.
I think also you just have a wonderful aura and that's your spiritual side.
Yeah, I agree.
You do have an aura around you for sure. And just going back to when I say that there wouldn't be many men that could fit the bill, I don't mean that in a derogatory sense at all, because I would imagine as a woman, it would take a lot for you to respect a man. And I know it's not his podcast, but I know he's pioneered a lot of leading techniques. Just touch on that, just
Morpheus
briefly.
8. That's the one that he invented.
Okay, yeah. So not all of our viewers and listeners will know that. Talk me about Morpheus 8.
So Morpheus 8, I have done it on my legs, like on your thighs. So it's a skin tightening. And I've done it on my stomach. And I've done it on my face, three times. It's wow.
What is it, a machine or what?
Yeah, it's like little needles that go into your skin. It really hurts. You can take laughing gas.
Yeah.
And the little needles go into your skin. And what it does is it damages your skin and it stimulates the collagen. But also, you know, it's good for collagen that you can just do every day.
Chicken broth?
Pomegranate juice.
Pomegranate juice?
Yeah, look up pomegranates.
Are you kidding me? Right, I'm buying loads.
Pomegranate juice is really good. So every morning, fresh squeezed pomegranate juice.
What was the first defining moment when you realized that you can conquer so many different things?
I don't know if I had a defining moment, but I've never let anything get in the way because I think you have to get out of your own way. And I also feel like you can't, when I had sisters that were institutionalized, they lived in the past and they never got over it.
How many of your sisters got institutionalized?
One ended up in halfway houses and two in full psychiatric. I've looked after a lot of people in my family, but they were literally in an institute. One sister, she started out with postpartum depression and then went into an institute from about 18, 19. My little sister still has struggles.
Yeah.
and a beautiful girl.
Sometimes the mind breaks and it just cannot get back together.
Yeah, I hope for her.
And no, I believe too. There's always hope.
She is the only one that's still living of the ones I grew up with. I have.
Do you feel you've dodged a bullet there? Because it obviously runs in the family.
I think they feel I did because I had a different father.
Oh, and
my father was also institutionalized.
Course.
The trauma, the incredible amount of trauma in my life. And it's been extraordinary, the losses.
Yeah.
And then the number of kids that I've had.
Yeah.
And I think you realize what's important and what isn't. And it's not money.
No.
And it's not money. But it is sure nice to have money to do what you would like to do.
Yeah.
And then I can have decisions to get back.
If you're a budding entrepreneur and you're starting on your way, I thought when I had nothing that money was going to buy me the security I craved.
I think a lot of people look outwards. You must give me this. I haven't got this. It's like that victim.
There is a lot of you must give me this.
Yes. And actually, no, nobody has to give you anything. The difference is you went in and pursued. And they, I don't think, want to go in because they don't feel there's anything there to find. The magic lies within.
I was at church, I guess, about 6 weeks ago, and the reverend said, "Do you know why I'm happy?" And he said, "Because I want nothing."
Yeah,
and I thought that is brilliant. But I also don't want people to look at me and go, "Oh, she's rich." I want people to want to be around me, want to sit next to me at a dinner table. So always think of who do you want next to you at a dinner table, because I'm interesting, or because I'm interested as well.
No. That's the point, is being interested.
Yeah.
What is the next company you would start in today's market?
I've opened a cafe called the Carb Cafe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that, the Carb Cafe.
Yeah, and I'm looking at opening one on Las Vegas on the Strip and just trying to build that out. I think that would be really fun.
Why carb, Anne?
It's
because everybody's against carbs.
Everyone's against carbs, and I made a joke and I said, "I don't eat carbs," and I did that. We talked about carbs with people from Vogue, girls, not the magazine itself. And we had about 1 million views, and that went viral. 20 million views. 20 million views, 80,000 comments telling me off about carbs.
I love carbs.
But I have all these allergies, so I can't eat bread, I can't eat pasta, I've got wheat allergy, I've got all this kind of thing. So I'm really careful about what I have.
I thought you were going to say AI. I thought you were going to say...
No, it just... And so anyway, and also I opened a restaurant in the castle, and... It's called the Naughty Dog. And so in the restaurant, we have like gourmet hot dogs and hamburgers and things like that. But we don't have any scones.
Scones, afternoon tea.
You can't have a castle and not have scones.
I know. That's what all the locals told me. So I decided to open up a place that has croissants and called it the Carb Cafe.
Brilliant.
And so it's all carbs.
The only thing
they have is carbs. It's all carbs. It's called the Carb Cafe. And it has croissant ice cream cones or croissants, and then the ice cream, and it has about 30 different flavors, and they're all things like bacon and caramel sauce and a cherry on top.
Love it.
And they're all weird ice cream cones.
Yeah.
And it costs more, £4 more for a plain ice cream cone than it does for one with dressed up. So I charge more if they're not creative. The other business I'm doing is... we have different homes all over Hawaii, British Virgin Islands, Las Vegas, Toronto, Vancouver, here.
Yeah.
Not homes, but investment places.
Yeah.
I have dinners with people that are very interesting, and I host the dinners, but somebody else sponsors them.
Brilliant.
And they bring all the people in. And they're all like Jeffrey Katzenberg will have his parties, 130 people at our place. And he invites people from his conference, and they're CEOs of companies that have founded companies. And I'm getting to know all of these CEOs and companies.
Yeah.
And we talked before we were on the podcast about networking and getting to know other people.
Sure.
This allows me to understand a whole world I never would be involved with. And then I can do the same in Toronto, and I do. And the same network of people. These people are very mobile.
Yeah.
They'll come to Vegas, and they'll come to Toronto. They'll come to Hawaii because they know I throw very private, good events, never sell their marketing list, never ever market to their lists. But I have them because we get security and everything in, and they're over-the-top parties. Like in some of the ones, we did Super Bowl and F1, and
brilliant.
We did all these parties and sponsored by others, Goldman
and
Sachs.
And the sponsor is getting the contacts.
They bring all the people.
Okay.
And they pay for the party. I don't make money off it.
So you're
but I organize it, and I organize it.
Okay,
I
have to organize it.
Because I want the showgirls as waitresses. I don't want somebody in black and white.
No.
I want geisha girls that are a fish tank.
Lovely.
handing out sushi.
Yes.
And I want interactive food stations.
You could have a woman swimming in a fish tank. I mean, you just
yes.
I know that sounds gross, yeah. but in my mind just went
it's just what we're doing.
Yes.
And so it's insane.
Yes.
And so we do that. And I think getting outside of your industry into something like that where you yes. can network
Hell
with
yes.
other people in the same successful level as you are. So those are all CEOs of companies.
Yes.
And then in the Super Bowl party was all the football players.
Yes.
And then they would bring in the investment venture capital funds
yes.
that the football players invest in. So they were there too.
Yeah.
And so you start yes. to get this Rolodex. I don't know yeah. if everybody knows what a Rolodex is, yeah, but a list of names. Yeah.
It's black book, little black book.
But you build trust.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they trust me to go and do a party in the yes. past.
I've been creating yeah. that with him. I've been doing it's, sort of dinner yes. parties yeah. and saying yeah. to him, we must have a garden party every year
and
or
do
half year.
With interesting with all the people. That's it's what, a headline grabber. And
exactly.
even to get
Look at the castle that you're doing. You're doing it in a quirky way. Look yeah. what you're calling the queen of the castle. You know, you've thought about having a TV crew in there to film it and to film the road and the journey that you're on. It is genius, but I don't think you realise, well, I'm sure you do, but you're very humble but extremely clever at what you do. That is a gift. There is nothing that strikes me about you that's particularly been done before. And if it has, you just do it 10 times better with a little bit of a twist on it. So the question is that I like to ask, and it's a bit of a silly one, really. You're on death row. What is your last meal?
On my last, not carbs. my last, oh my goodness. I would have Thai basil curry. Made with A. Roy D. red curry sauce with broccoli and tofu.
That was specific.
Yeah. Yeah. And a little bit of palm sugar.
That's brilliant. I'm going to ask you a question that we ask everybody.
Yeah.
If you are the UK government, what would be the first policy you bring in?
I'd get a hairdresser for Rachel Reeves. I mean, seriously.
I agree with you. I was moaning about that the other day to Roz.
She's on news networks, and all I can see
I don't even think she'd washed it on the morning of the budget. Do you know that?
It's well, she's washed everyone else's hair in that budget. It's not political, mm. but I would start investing in the future. I would start taking money and going into debt.
Do you feel there's hope for the UK business-wise, or do you think we're on a long diet?
I think if with this current budget, and with the lack of investment into mm-hmm. the country, mm-hmm. there's no hope. You have to put money in. Like, mm-hmm. picture the castle. If I don't put money in mm-hmm. to renovate mm-hmm. the hotel rooms mm-hmm. and build the restaurants that support yeah. the whole network, how is a country without investment going to make to money grow. By just cutting everywhere?
Yeah.
So they're cutting everywhere.
Agreed.
They're taxing everyone. Yeah. It's yeah. hard for people to pay bills. How are people going to be entrepreneurial?
Yeah, what state's Canada in?
Canada is in a better position than they are, but it's still a very, very high tax. So one of the things that we had, we paid up to 65% tax on my salary in Canada.
Did you?
Very, very high tax. But you accept it. It's a way of life.
Why is it? Why do people
When you're over a certain amount, you pay a lot of tax.
Oh, I see. Okay. Was there an element of the Liz Truss business model that actually could have worked?
Yeah, I wasn't as familiar with Liz Truss because that was just before we had... She was very short in power, so I wasn't as familiar, but that going into debt is what I would do.
Mm.
I would be investing back into the country, and that has worked in many, many countries.
Really?
In Dubai right now,
that,
yeah, they're rolling out the welcome mat saying, come invest in our, we won't even charge you tax. Mm-hmm. Come here, invest, and live here. They're doing that in Dubai. And you know who the poster child is for immigration to Dubai? Rachel Reeves. They're thanking her.
Are you kidding me?
Well, it's a joke, but
it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I tell you, they're all going to Italy as well.
Yeah, we're taking up residency.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But still be here.
We could just go on and on and on today. You have been Dr. Anne Kaplan-Mulholland. You have been
fabulous.
An absolute joy.
Thank you.
To interview. We
you've been
have,
a joy to talk to
we
you.
We have
you're so
loved
fun.
It.
The two of you are so fun.
I need your zip pockets.
They're so fun. I have a shirt on underneath because I thought it would be a little bit too.
Move the tie so people can see. I just it's like
pockets.
Vivian Westwood, isn't it?
I thought those pockets were just to pad your boobs out.
Oh yeah, they could.
Can I just thank you so much on behalf of Roz and I? You are a true entrepreneur. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can you do us a favor? Can you hit that follow and subscribe button?
You can find us anywhere where you get your podcasts on Entrepreneurs Worldwide. And there'll be a new episode every Wednesday at 5 a.m.